Hey everybody, it's Charlie here. I just wanted to let you know that this is the live recording from the Southeastern Library Assessment Conference on November 16th, 2015. Due to catastrophic technical difficulties, this is the poor mix. This is the backup mix. This is the mix that I should have paid more attention to before I hit record. I'm sorry for the quality. I hope you like it anyway, and if you turn it off, no hard feelings.
Consiliums
with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie. The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
Might as well get into it, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm the nerd. I'm the STEM guy. We're the evil people that would love to see the entire collection as we see it, right? Not the rare books collection. Digitized and put on the cloud.
Do you want to just hold on a second and let's do a sound check and we can, you know, like get ourselves.
We don't have a lot of time, dude.
We don't have a lot of time. Well, if we can just waste enough, then we can just say assessment is awesome and then we're done.
It is. It's just hard to do.
You can cash the check before we know what's happening. This is an improv exercise. I don't know how many people caught that when it was described.
I think they can tell now.
Well, now they can tell. We are comprehensively unprepared to give this keynote. Every Tuesday. Whoa, don't do
sorry,
that.
Sorry.
Every Tuesday. Sorry. What are you doing? You're killing me. Every Tuesday.
You're eating the mic.
Lock ourselves in a room and talk about whatever comes to mind. So this is strange because there's an actual topic. Okay. But I have notes.
Beware, he has cards.
I have cards. Somewhere there's a thing about Moby Dick. That's for Kim Boyd. And we are recording the audience. So if you're afraid that your laugh will be noticed for later when we put this on the internet forever, keep it to yourself. When we open up for questions, if you speak into this mic, then it will be recorded. If you come and assault us after, it will not be recorded. Okay, now you can do your thing about your nerd assessment and all that.
Well, I put it out there on the table. You're the librarian. The gauntlet has been... I did something with a go, but I'm not sure what.
Okay, why don't you tell me finally in front of all of these librarians what you really think about librarians?
I love librarians. I think they're great.
That is not what you say.
No, that is not true. That's not true. I worry about the field, right? So in doing a little prep, looking at assessment, I worry that, will you even call it library science in 10 years? It's going to be something that you do cool stuff in these buildings that used to house the collection. Our collection's moving off campus, basically.
What do you mean, your collection?
They don't own the collection?
It's our collection.
It's a collective collection. What you're saying.
You've paid nothing into our collection for years. College of Engineering just says, go ahead, you know, buy some databases so we can get the articles we need.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So when we read, am I really hot?
Yes. Stop eating the mic.
I just feel more comfortable here.
Okay. I can bring you down.
Okay. So we read Creating a Culture of Assessment to prepare for this. And Pete got all excited. He's like, this is awesome, lean startup, which made me want to punch him in the head because I am tired of lean startup talk affecting my cultural edifice of great importance.
Why?
And lasting value.
What's wrong with lean startup?
You want to disrupt. You want to innovate. You want to have this continuous improvement that's just sort of like constant change. For change's sake, Pete.
No. The article actually references Deming, sort of the...
No, I'm talking about you.
No, I'm not one of these people. Let's change for change's sake.
Explain yourself.
So, to be honest, when we read through this Lakos Phipps article, Creating a Culture of Assessment, a Catalyst for Organizational Change, which we're using as a stepping off point for this, they actually mentioned how to deal with an institution that operates under huge uncertainty. Our library does some great things for Lean Startup and the students that do innovation and entrepreneurship. They actually house the Startup Exchange. It's a student group. They get room in the library, although they're being kicked out because of the renovation.
No, they've been kicked out.
Oh, they've been kicked out.
Okay. But they come back and they use the space just to use it.
Well, the thought was good.
They never ask, Pete.
And if you ask one of our students, they'll say that, you know, a startup is something that's trying to make a product under huge uncertainty. I did my minor in graduate school.
The product was something new, right?
Well, yeah,
it's something new. And that's what bothers me, right? Because the product that we're talking about is not libraries themselves, but the product we're talking about is services inside a library.
And won't those be new in the next decade?
Yeah, but people seem to conflate the two. They say that libraries are going to be different. Are you even going to call them a library? Some guy I was talking to recently said, are you even going to call it library science?
I think I just said that.
In 10 years. Yeah, it was you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wait, I'm fine with the first laugh. Okay, we're good. Keep going.
And when you're undergraduate, certainly, when I was a graduate student...
Why are there all these cords on the table?
Just to annoy you.
You said you had a plan. I didn't know the plan was just to dump your suitcase on the table.
I was caught in traffic.
Yeah.
There was nothing I could do.
You live three houses down the road.
You're not going to let me get in a word edgewise, are you?
Mission accomplished.
I mean, in the old days, we used to write something called a business plan. Did anyone ever write a business plan when they were in school, right? And then we realized... Business plans don't work when there's tremendous uncertainty, right? So as a scientist or applied scientist engineer, I'm excited about the fact that these entrepreneurs are using the scientific method. They're trying something under a very short sprint, and then they're taking actual assessment data to see if students like it, faculty like it, and then they're changing it, and they keep doing that over anywhere from a 1 week to a 4 month sort of thing. And I realize that is not how libraries operate. Do libraries still have big plans for the year or 2 years or 3 years?
I have heard that there's a strategic plan at Georgia Tech. And I think I helped write it.
The library or in general?
For the library.
Okay.
I haven't seen it. And Amit, where is the strategic plan?
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
He carries it with him at all times.
It can fit in the jacket pocket.
How nice.
So you think that libraries don't operate in such a way to handle things like a startup, but you're still happy that the assessment culture is coming so that we can have startup-like innovation and fast change?
Well, startup companies, I think, have an assessment culture, right? It depends on what book you read, right? So if you read The Lean Startup by Eric Rice or Reese, it's build, measure, learn. If you read about Scrum, it's got a different acronym. If you go back to Deming's original work done after World War II, it was based on statistical process control.
Was that the measure and manage guy?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is why Toyota is so successful, and lean startup companies are doing that here. I would claim that the library now is a startup. That's my contention. No?
Explain why.
Because you're operating under huge uncertainty.
But we've been operating under uncertainty since Dewey said, no longer will librarians be gray mousers, you know, shuffling around the stacks. Meaning no longer will librarians be cats. Like, the most famous librarian in America made a cat joke when he declared that it was a profession.
Yes, and your point is?
That the brand has been crisis this whole time. I want to know what it is now that means we're under great uncertainty.
Oh,
we should bring the startup culture, the assessment culture in.
I just think it's a bigger change, right? So, for example, for the longest time, it was the collection, access to the collection, and doing research via access to the collection. And that's changed. It's become very electronic. And here's why I like librarians, even though he claims I don't. You know, in fact, you see it in the library literature, delivery to the desktop. We love delivery to the desktop. My faculty colleagues have said, none of them have been in the library in more than a decade since we closed the coffee shop there. So coffee is something the faculty would like to have. And I think we've been doing that well at Georgia Tech. So delivery to the desktop is something that we definitely like. And, you know, helping us with the collection, every once in a while you click on something and we're supposed to have a subscription to it and we don't. And our electronic library, I call them up and in an hour or 30 minutes they find out why it wasn't there and they fix it. That's the new version of it, so it's changed. But it's still access to the collection, doing research with the collection. And if you talk about assessment, I mean, okay, no one disagrees that an assessment culture is good, right? I mean, you don't like the assessment culture?
I was in a presentation at a conference years ago, back when I was but a lowly library student. And at the end, somebody came up and said to me, so how are you measuring this thing? I said, I just wanted to tell you about a thing I was doing. And they said, no, you got to measure it. You can't just do things because they're cool. And for me, that's the reason to do anything, is because it's cool. And by cool, I don't mean like James Dean and Fonzie cool. I mean, it's that it's interesting and that it's compelling and that it seems to circle the mission of the library. And I mean, this is why we have that 5-year, you know, promotion review, so that you can kind of screw up in the middle and go a different way.
The screwing up is good, though. You should be making mistakes.
You should, right? But the immediate sort of, okay, so you're building a treehouse in the library, how are you going to measure that? It's like, and this is real. We built a treehouse in the library. I don't know how to measure a treehouse.
Did you build a treehouse in the library?
I did build a treehouse in the library.
Where is that?
Oh, well, it's gone now. Because we couldn't measure it. They had to take it out. But this is, all joking aside, there is a clear and, tech will screw you every time. Okay, I'll get to it in a second.
You want
to
finish this thought? From something?
Yes.
Okay.
So there is, to me, a way to shut down innovation by using a culture of assessment to stop things from happening when they're unmeasurable or when they are not immediately measurable. You know, when the impact takes longer, like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So a lean startup, which is like, we're going to burn down. This house is going to be burnt to the foundations by some period of time. What's the language?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Rate? Anybody have a startup in this
burn
room?
Burn rate? Is that what you're talking about?
Burn down the money. The money's all gone.
Oh, yeah, that's the burn rate. Right. How you lose your money.
They're talking 6 months, right?
Do you agree with what I'm saying? Because in these start things, right? You basically start with a thesis statement. This is the work out of thesis statement. This is the work out of Steve Blank. Steve Blank out of Stanford.
Just make up names.
No, it's a weird name though, isn't it? X will buy Y because X will buy Y because of Z, and your Y because of Z, and yours will be, X will use library services Y because of Z.
I think that libraries are important because civilization. I'm not pulling a Brian Matthews here. I'm not going to say that you should not do assessment, right? I think you should. But I think you should do it in a very loose, backed off way when you have librarians, me, who are just trying things out. There has to be some space for just trying things out. And the idea that you can ratchet down to the point where we can't figure out why this is good, we can't measure why this is good, so we're going to back off from it, that worries me.
Okay, I'm not condoning that culture. Have you been in a startup? I've worked in startups. Startups are crazy people with t-shirts and popcorn all day.
You could hold a gun to my head, I wouldn't get into a startup.
Anyway, so startups are people
those
like...
Those kids scare me, man.
Let's try this. And they simply do a simple assessment. Well, they'll do qualitative interviews, right? In fact, Steve Blank and all the guys that condone this method say you should never have a survey. You should do a sit-down interview and say, what did you think about the treehouse in the library? Was it useful? Did it motivate you? Did it make you... And it can be very qualitative. And then they'll say, dude, if you had like a margarita bar there too, it'd be even better. And you learn extra stuff like that.
We used to call it the disco ball reality check.
Yeah, this draconian... atmosphere of assessment, you know, where everyone can do a Tukey actual significance test on something. No, you don't need that. And the startup people aren't doing that either.
What did you just say about the significance test?
I teach a lot of analysis of variance, and you know, if you do something and say, oh, they're different, and then you want to recheck two of them, because of your assumptions, you can't just redo the analysis of variance. Tukey invented this weird test. It's something like real significance.
Oh, Tukey is a person.
Tukey's a person, and I just love
it. It's not having two keys.
I talked about Tukey when I tried...
I feel like that would be more important to have two keys.
For the library, it would be. Yeah, so we're in agreement. But what I see in... Can I pick on our library?
Am I allowed to do that?
I sometimes see... And raise your hand if you see this sort of draconian, iron-fisted, well, you're going to do it this way, and you must have the assessment plan before you start it. Do other people see that?
I see one, two, three, four.
Here's the problem. I think for libraries...
One person is laughing at you for asking that question.
And that's okay. I think the problem is... I don't know what libraries in the next decade should be doing, let alone what you should be assessing. So I think you should be allowed to try anything. And the first assessment is, just ask people, so what'd you think of the East Commons of the Library that you put together, which is now an incubator space for startups?
That was
a good thing. I mean,
they built it and threw me into it and said, make it work.
And I've given workshops in that space that uses humorous improv to catalyze technical innovation. And Wayne Lee from Industrial Design has done drawing ideation workshops in there and things like that. And doesn't he have something weird on the second floor now, too?
Well, since we're closing half of the library so we can destroy it from the inside, we had to move everything to the other side of the library.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then he wants to build...
You're just going to let that go by?
No, I'm going to let that go by. I'm not. You told me not to get crazy.
I'm thinking about asking you to be in my office when they demolish it.
But Wayne wants to build an ethnography studio in the library to get customer feedback and things like that. So this culture of assessment, I think is fine as long as we recognize that at the beginning it is very qualitative, and that's okay.
That's a big thing in the article, was that it seemed like in a lot of ways what they were saying is to create a culture of assessment in the library, you had to basically get people to relax their balls. Like, staff are rewarded for work in the application of new learning that demonstrates improved service quality or better outcomes for customers. Staff are supported to continuously improve their capability to serve customers and are rewarded for this. It was the thing about trust. Because I think that's the big problem. Certainly right now, with massive change at the Georgia Tech Library, people feel unsupported. They worry that they're being turned into a number. They're worried that people are just sort of cross. They're worried that Steve Swann and Bud Peterson are in a room together going,
"You should be worried. Maybe you should be worried about that.
Maybe less books." And then 15 years later, there's no library.
No, what you're saying is something that's written in both Lean Startup and Scrum, that you should empower multidisciplinary teams, right? That there shouldn't be necessarily, you know, the library for this works on this. It should be the librarian for all the different things, all contribute to one thing. And you are empowered to do things, change things, and fail. Failure's okay. Failure is a part of doing business. Failure is a part of doing research, too. We fail most of the time. I sit in a weekly research meeting with my graduate students, and we're like, well, I couldn't get this synthesis to work. It all turned green after 3 minutes, and we're not sure why. And then we need to figure it out. So
didn't you blow up a polymer lab?
I did. I blew up the polymer science lab at MIT, which is why I do theoretical and numerical calculations now. But the question is, you guys have your work cut out for you because, well, let me say two reasons. One, I'm not sure what the library should be doing, right? Still, access to the collection is more electronic, the collection is more in the cloud, that's really important. And then for those of you that have humanities, the rare books. Do people still put on those cotton gloves?
Are you saying you don't know what services a library should provide? Is that what you mean? Or you don't know what libraries should do in terms of how to support a culture of assessment and prepare for the massive changes that are coming at them, like an asteroid with Bruce Willis on it?
But I think libraries should figure out what they can do to support their customers. That's what startup businesses do. Faculty and students.
Customers.
It's called customer discovery.
You made me crazy.
Why?
How are they customers? This is the thing. Like this is where I want to get. You know, I want to hang myself from a tree, right? Like Odin, and sacrifice myself idea that libraries are powerful cultural institutions, right? They are not businesses that need to figure out how customers can be right or can be satisfied in the moment, right? There we have a contract with the future. right? That we need to be around, that we need to save things for when they are necessary. I was in a meeting once. I won't say where. I won't say when. I won't say with who, right? But it was at the Georgia Tech Library with the head of collections development a long time ago. And she said, you know, we are never going to buy a Danielle Steele book, right?
Isn't that part of our culture?
It is. It is part of our culture. And it was a moment where I thought, well, I don't know how to change her mind, you know, except to say people want to read Danielle Steele. And that was like the moment that whole give them what they want. This is an article from a long time ago. It's big broadside. Give them what they want. This is how libraries will survive. It struck me that like that's the central argument we've been having for a long time. You know Richard Price, the scriptwriter?
No, but I'm sure you're going
to
tell me.
I'm about to tell you all about it, right? So he wrote for The Wire. He wrote the movie Sea of Love with Al Pacino and Ellen Barkin, which was a good movie.
It was a good movie.
Except they changed the third act on it. Anyway, he said that what happens is you write a first draft, right? And it's, what is it? Bulgur wheat and yogurt. Tastes like shit, but it's really good for you, right? And then the executives say, look, why don't you do Count Chocula? Right, something that's very sweet and terrible for you, the writer. He says, okay, well, let's compromise. Let's do fruit salad, right? And in a lot of ways, the library, the capital L library, mm-hmm. is constantly trying to figure out how to give the bulgur wheat and yogurt, right? To give the nutrition, the thing that will keep people alive, will keep civilization alive, while also making people feel like, you know, they're not being spoon-fed something that's just good for them. How do you figure out what fruit salad is for a library? Because if you let a bunch of 18-year-olds decide what's going to be in your library, it's not going to look good. And it's not going to look good 10 years from now.
I would concur. We have the same assessment problem. My student customers are your student customers. They're the same.
Stop saying customers. There's room under this table for me to beat you up and then come back down.
But he's very violent in all these podcasts. I don't know. Too much coffee.
I was so scared. You were like, I'm on 400. I don't know how I'm going to get there. I'll see you at 12. I mean, I thought I was going to have to grab a meet and get him to do this. And
I'm sure he'd do a better job.
He won't take any abuse from me. Like, that's how we do our show together.
But so I think of my students as my customers. Why is that a dirty word for you guys? And I believe I am, you know, pushing forward the boundaries of engineering research.
Have you ever suffered that whole, I pay your salary, you need to teach the class the way I
want
to teach
it? Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
And so that's what I fear.
There's a great article about students as customers, and it says, well, they are your customers in the sense that, you know, you owe them something. You owe them this knowledge, this education, this sort of thing. But yeah, they're not customers in the sense that they're going to determine exactly what they want for their vacation package. So you're right. It's a middle-of-the-road mediated kind of thing. So if I'm saying we should do whatever they want, we'd have roller derby in the library, would we? I don't know. What would students want?
We have had a roller derby jammer in the library. That has happened. She was on skates.
Okay, I agree. I like your fruit salad awesome. Metaphor. And we need to find a thing that will engage the students, but will give them what they need. And let me tell you what I think they need from my perspective. And as much as it sounds like I'm throwing the library under the bus, the academic units have the same problem. And I'll say this right now, on the record. The way we teach our engineers here at Georgia Tech, for the most part, is horrible. We have lots of equations, lots of classes with lots of equations and mathematics in them. And we don't say, hey, let's gouge out a quarter of the curriculum and allow them to do multidisciplinary experiences that don't even look like classes. Now, we have to count them like classes because our students don't do anything for credit. And the library would be an integral part of that, where they would go into the library for these multidisciplinary experiences. Only mechanical engineering is really doing that. We do something called Idea to Prototype. It's actually funded by Chris Klaus, who paid for that nice building in the NC campus.
It's actually over there.
Okay, it's over there. You're right. I'm confused. Where they get money to actually build a prototype, and it's all multidisciplinary. I've got three chemical engineers that are working with electrical engineers, computer engineers, and mechanical engineers. And because they don't allow us to have these multidisciplinary things, we have to sneak it under the table and call it undergraduate research, and we're all signing off on different departments, and I don't think the provost knows what we're doing. And that multidisciplinary aspect, which is something we don't do, maybe the library could be a central focus for that. And I keep telling them, and they laugh at me. I said, you know, if you're going to turn this into something, you probably need a business person from across the highway. You probably need, heaven forbid, a policy person, right? We've got all these public policy folks, and our engineers don't understand why that's important when they're trying to do something in the real world.
So this is what I hear, is that you're saying you want to use those principles, those lean startup principles, like try a thing, measure it, change it, do that. But what you don't want is for the provost to be doing that to you. You want to have your assessment be part of whatever the project is you're doing, and to keep it contained for at least a while, right, until you can prove yourself.
Oh, yeah, and this is a principle of startups, that you're insulated. People that do entrepreneurship, right, within a company, they're kind of insulated from the rest of the company to do that. I'm going to use that analogy. I don't care how much it upsets you.
So how long do you think you need to do your interdisciplinary stuff before you could then go to the higher-ups and say, hey, here's the proposal, here's what we did, here's how we measured it, this is why it's successful. How much time do you need?
It varies depending on the project. It could be 6 months. It could be several years.
This particular one that you're doing with the...
Yeah. So let me tell you why we haven't gone to the higher-ups yet.
I would love to hear.
For the same reason I think a lot of people in libraries haven't is, it's not so much the cultural of assessment, it's the culture of risk and entrepreneurship that you have to adopt. And we don't have that here. The best quote I ever heard on this was a colleague from Carnegie Mellon who came to our first 21st Century University conference. And he said, what would you change? He said, I'd like to get rid of classes and classrooms and make things problem-based learning, multidisciplinary, realistic experiences. And that doesn't mean I can't sit down for half the class and teach them lots of differential equations. But now that all the knowledge is available there, for them to memorize 47 methods to solve partial differential equations numerically is stupid. They learned the two or three that are the canonical representative ones, and I said, look, there's a bunch of other ones that are good when the equations are of this form or of this form. You can look them up. Hopefully the library will help us find that knowledge.
Probably actually a librarian, not the building itself.
So I'm just not exactly sure what it is, but why do I use the library? I use the library for specialty stuff. Patent and trademark searches is something I use our librarian for. I have tried to get copyrights only on a lot of my obnoxious t-shirts. Like I've got one that's got a THC molecule on it, and it says Better Living Through Chemistry, that I use as a visual aid to teach people about ligand receptor binding.
I would try to get copyright on that, but you get sued.
No, I don't think tetrahydro...
No, here's the thing. If someone hasn't already made that t-shirt, then I don't want to live in this world.
Oh, they haven't made it with the correct delta 9 isomer of THC.
I reminded
people of that at the 420, the 420 festival.
But the point that I was making and the thing that I want to get back to.
There was a point?
Yes, is your lack of trust in your administration, the larger administration, to help you do this interdisciplinary?
Yes, I will so stipulate.
Yeah, so what do you need? What do you need to trust them? Because keep coming back, this article, it's about trusting an organization. The culture of assessment in an organization without trust is essentially a way to shut everybody down.
Because you need to trust your multidisciplinary teams, right. Let them do their thing, let them fail. We need to change management.
Change management?
Yeah, I mean, university presidents and provosts and deans of libraries need to be innovative and entrepreneurial.
I thought you were going a completely different direction with that.
Where did you think I was going?
Just something that would be done to them, I guess.
No, I'm not suggesting the guillotine be implemented once again.
So it seems like an easy thing to say, you should trust in your staff and be innovative. So why wouldn't they? Why would there be? Oh, someone just tweeted.
Why wouldn't there what?
Why wouldn't they trust? And why wouldn't they be innovative? And why wouldn't they be loose about this stuff? What's going on?
Self-esteem problems,
you were an administrator for a very short period
and,
of time.
And I basically got fired.
So when
I was an administrator...
Fired by agreement.
In the Center for Academic Enrichment, we tried to do some new things. We made some mistakes. We thought it was okay to speak our mind about how we did living learning communities and things like that. But the thing that killed me is we had these big three picture windows at our conference room, And we couldn't get any meetings done because 1,000 students would go to the Starbucks and walk by that every 30 minutes.
Yeah, this is in the Clough Undergraduate Learning Commons, which is essentially a Starbucks with a bunch of classrooms around it.
Yeah, and we wanted to put up frosted glass. So I found a place that for $50 a window would make frosted glass for the two side panels, and the middle one had our logo in it. And I did talk to the building people, and I said, this is what we're planning on doing. But as soon as we did it, I literally got a cease and desist letter sent to me that said, if we don't remove it immediately, they will get an estimate on what it would cost to remove it.
And then bill you.
And then bill me. And my daughter's a junior here at Georgia Tech. We just had a 9% tuition.
Here, Georgia Tech is over there.
Georgia Tech.
We
just had a 9%
territory.
A 9% tuition increase.
I don't even recognize this place.
I am not happy at them making that threats and then saying, oh, we'll put frosted glass in there for you for $1,500 a window. And we're run by the library.
Now, I understand that you're very angry.
I am angry.
But why are you telling us this?
We need to get rid of that culture. I mean, we need to have people that will go do crazy things.
When you were part of that culture.
Like build a treehouse in the library.
What did you do to change it? And why did that culture resist you and, in fact, eject you?
I tried to think that living learning communities should be a grassroots sort of thing that come from the students. I said, if you want to make them curricular, by the way, and have a required class, the required class must count toward your degree. We keep adding classes. This would be nice. Ooh, innovation entrepreneurship. Most of them don't count toward the degrees. And that's what we need to change, right? And that's a base level overhaul. And I would like to see the library be part of that. I used to say that the coolest part about your experience here at Georgia Tech often happened outside the classroom, in Startup Exchange, in the library, and
Do you still believe that?
Yeah, I think they should just get credit for that. Is that a heinous thing to say?
Oh, you mean like actual transcript credit?
Yeah, because that is the coin of the realm.
Because we can just tell them, hey, you did good. Good job. Credit to you. Would that be enough?
Well, probably not for our assessment people.
How do you want the library to be part of this?
I don't know. I want the library to be part of this.
You must have a vision, man.
Well, I guess I envision... So my students tell me the greatest thing about the library now is the ability to have group study. It's the only place they can do it there. So we're kind of set up for that sort of thing. We should be doing more group projects. They should be multidisciplinary projects. That's a great place for them to go. What do they need to support themselves? I think that's an open question. I'd love to hear from the audience on that. Some people would say, oh, we need Wayne Lee's ethnography laboratory. That might be cool. We have plenty of computers and access to the collection and other things as well. You know, do we need 3D printers? Do we need good coffee? Maybe.
3D printers on...
Yeah, I don't know about 3D printers, but what's really cool is, when I was in Baltimore doing these shows for the Fringe Festival and the STEM Festival, I went to a builder space, I went to a maker space, but it wasn't a maker space with 3D printers and programmable lathes, it was a maker space for biology. They could do polymerase chain reactions, they can inject genes via plasmids into E. coli. There were artists painting with E. coli in patterns that would have a particular color because they change the genome. And if you can do something like that, then I think we can do anything. I don't know what belongs in the library, but something belongs in the library.
I am growing something in my fridge right now.
Perhaps that belongs in the library.
So we're coming in for a landing here.
Okay.
We've said a lot of stuff. I really don't know how to pull it together because you keep talking about your business. But what are we going to do, right? How do we, the library, and you, say the College of Engineering, or at least the faculty of research universities, mm-hmm. how do we bond together and create a culture of assessment or help a culture of assessment take hold in a way that's useful and it doesn't have to sneak around, doesn't have to stay under the radar and figure out how to, you know, let's have something so in 3 years we can explain what we did and hopefully not get fired.
But if you have this open culture, you get to try and experiment and fail.
If you have it, but how do we get it?
Oh, that's a harder question. Mm-hmm. But the assessment, I think, is easy. The people that do the teams should figure out how to assess it. For example, I'm going to brag about the library now. 99.9% of the time when I go to try to get a journal at the library, and I look up WHERE journals, I look up HUMOR, the International Journal of Humor Research, which I think we might get through a public domain thing, but still, I look up WHERE education. I have an NSF grant now to look at humor in engineering education. I'm looking up some WHERE journals.
Is this all we are to you? We're a newsstand?
Well, no, but I'm saying what would be nice is in the rare occasion when you cannot find it, simply change our interface to say, can't find your journal, tell me about it and what that journal is. Don't send me that email every year saying, what are the books and journals you want in the library? I don't remember. I'm old. I'm like, I knew there were a couple. I can't remember what it was. But if you suddenly have all this data from a simple thing saying 47 people, you know, in this year asked for this particular journal or that particular journal. Because I know, don't you guys struggle to figure out what subscriptions you're going to do and all this money you pay to Elsevier? These
I try not to go to the IRC meetings because they're very depressing. But from what I understand, mostly it's, hey, we're going to have to cancel this unless somebody wants to really fight. Mm-hmm. And then we cancel it. And then we move on.
Okay. That's fine by me.
You know why?
Why?
Because there's no money coming from you. You just come to the newsstand and steal shit.
Look, they hit the College of Engineering up for just about everything else.
So are you saying that what you want is for there to be something like, do you want like Clippy to pop up and say, how was your visit to the library today? Did you find what you needed?
I never liked that icon. No, I think we need to figure out what it is. And let's face it, I don't need to be asked a qualitative question, but when it comes to just journals, if it's not there, somebody needs to mark that down in a quick and easy way. That's just one example of how to do assessment.
It's all journals with you. It's just...
No. So I'm a researcher, but when it comes to teaching, it's really hard. You guys want to do educational outcomes. It's hard for us to do educational outcomes because I'm directly there. I can give them a test. I can give them assessment. I assess my students with an instructor immediacy survey on did the instructor use humor? And by the way, it's a validated instrument. We actually got it from somebody else. And what's funny is the first time we did this thing, I tried to be funny at 8 o'clock and not funny at 9:30. There was no statistical difference in it, which actually tells us something very important about humor. Humor needs to be integrated. You can't just tell jokes.
8 and 9:30, it just doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah, and we learned that the 8:30 class and the 9:30 class are
very different.
So you guys have your work cut out for you, because how do you assess your impact with all these, whether it's coffee or 3D printers or multidisciplinary space.
Damn.
You know, access to the journals, access to specialty folks who will talk to you about intellectual property and patent searches and trademark and copyright stuff on a student, because they're seeing you in a tangential fashion, right? They're using you to complete something, but how do you assess that? You know, just good old fashioned, you have to do some interviews. You actually have to talk to some people. It will be very diffuse. Qualitative data, that's okay too. So, for example, the way people do customer discovery is they simply go out and say, would you buy a product like this? And then they have sub-theses like, I'm actually working on something kind of cool. We're trying to make a synthetic liquor.
All right, Pete, I can feel you sort of gathering energy to do another half hour.
All right. Do you want to do a question?
We have to. This is the moment normally where I wait for a part where I can just cut them off.
You keep pressing. Stop pressing. Get off my back.
So we can put in the theme music at the end. But
do we want to hear what the folks heard?
Oh, yeah, these people have got to tell us how wrong we are.
Yeah.
So if anybody would like to go on record, I wouldn't say tape.
Check. Check, 1, 2, 3, check. Okay.
Yeah, something that they can straighten Pete or I about. We got about 10 minutes, and we would love to hear from anybody out there. Yeah, let's start with, I'm gonna use nepotism. Let's start with Kim back there first, and then right here in the front.
Are you related to Kim?
Technically.
Oh.
So I don't really think I need this.
Eat the mic, Kim.
Okay. All right, I'm going to eat the mic. Two questions. What is the name of the measure that asked the students whether or not the person has used humor?
Okay, it's, I'm trying to think. I do about four different surveys. I think it's an instructor immediacy survey.
Okay.
So immediacy is how immediately can you relate to the instructor? It's very important for distance learning. And I can look that up and send you an email and let you know what that is.
Charlie has my email address. Thank you. Okay. And the other thing is, when you were saying there ought to be a button, because I need this journal, it's called the Find It button. And we do collect stats through interlibrary loan about what professors have been looking for that we don't have. just so you know.
Oh, okay, so you collect it. So you're right. When I go to interlibrary loan, that means we don't have it.
Yes, we pay attention to what you're looking for that we don't have.
So it's already in there, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time I couldn't find what I wanted, though. So I don't hit it a lot. So
that's because Georgia Tech has a lot of money.
Okay. There you go. There you go. Right up front here.
Do you have any suggestions for when the lack of trust comes from inside the library rather than outside the library? How do you make a culture of assessment then?
How many people from Georgia Tech are here in the room besides me and Mute? Just us. Okay. So, I believe that there's a academic social contract that's sort of been in place for a long time that's starting to erode. And the academic social contract is, I'm not going to worry about profit, I'm not going to get holiday bonuses, I'm not going to participate in profits, but you're not going to mess with me, right? Like, we've taken essentially a pay cut where we are not making the money that we're worth if we were out there in the world. But the reason we're doing that is to try things and to be able to fail and be able to just kind of be okay with that, right? Now, normally when I describe this, I use very different words and people throw me out of bars, but
he's in him a lot.
Yeah. But the reason that trust, I think, is eroding is because the messing with has really started in earnest. You know, we have a slowly corporatizing culture at Georgia Tech, where a number of our directors are from industry, you know, and they've brought competence and power, right? But they've also brought one version of a culture of assessment, or one version of a culture of, I need to know now, and it's got to be done, right? And there hasn't been any balancing sort of freedom, right? The academic freedom, or the just sort of freedom to fail, has been tightened up also. So if we could not have that, that would be one way to, you know, bring more trust to the organization, or if we acknowledge it and do something to make up for that kind of ratcheting down. That's just me. I'm kind of angry, and a lot of stuff I do is just cool and doesn't really have a measurement attached to it.
But don't you think it could have a measurement attached to it?
Yeah, well, I'm not letting them anywhere near it. Another question?
But you should do the measurement, dude. You invented it. Do the measurement.
Yeah.
I guess my favorite example of that is the Space Science and Technology Committee in Congress is very interested in NSF. They requested a whole bunch of their proposals to look at them. One of them was a study looking at, do science festivals help teach people science? So they're messing with their assessment of something really cool that people do. And I perform at the USA Science and Engineering Festival in Washington. We should be assessing that. And it may be very qualitative, but like, is this cool? Is your child here more interested in science and applied science at the end of it? And that's what startup businesses do. Startup businesses don't get in the way. You're thinking of old, stodgy businesses.
I can do very good assessment on the radio show that Amit and I produce now, right? I can actually tell who listens, who subscribes to the podcast.
But you should be doing the assessment, not some centralized serve, whatever.
But when we started, we were nothing, right? Like for 3 years, we were just a couple of guys who went to the radio station.
Yeah, you don't know how to assess at the beginning.
And
that's okay.
If we started trying to measure things then,
yeah,
it never would have gotten
No one hands. Can assess at the beginning.
Okay, someone with sense has something to say.
Okay.
Thank you very much. This is my first time to get involved in library assessment on the faculty. But I do like your suggestion that the library needs to reinvent itself and become something more than what it is right now. I was wondering, from your suggestion about tracing the genome by biologists using the library, are you talking about having some real teaching activities running within the library? Say, for example, you bring GIS section, put it in the library. Go bring the research methodologies that are being taught in sociology, psychology, bring them to be taught within the library, and so on and so forth. So that way you can actually assess student learning outcomes. Mm-hmm. That sounds very revolutionary, given the fact that we do operate in silos. How are we going to negotiate? Do you have anything in mind? Or this is something, a continued conversation? How are we going to negotiate that?
Please start, Charlie.
So we have a couple classes that are taught inside the Georgia Tech Library, 4 credit classes that are taught by teams of faculty. And we are able to see what they're doing, and we're able to see how interconnected they are with their subject liaison when they use library resources, when they request certain things like reserves and all that. Right now, though, we're not getting much entanglement with those classes because they're just one of many different things that is happening in the library. You know, we are short-staffed, and we're trying to renovate the buildings. And so really, we just have classes hosted in the library building. But what they say is that they, and by they I mean the students and the faculty members, they enjoy being in the library because it feels like a neutral place for multidisciplinary education. They feel like the library is open to everyone, that it's a spot where they can come, and when they step away from class, when they do a breakout session, they're all still in their space. They're not stepping out into someone else's academic department, and suddenly the ME has home field advantage, right? And that's as far as we've gotten in the actual teaching of classes in the library as, you know, part of the curriculum, as part of your degree transcript.
Right. But I think in the future, and I'm not suggesting that bio thing right away, that would require biohazard approved fume hoods in the library. Maybe we're not ready for that yet. But classes are old. 15-week classes are old. They're dead. We'd like to chop them into 5-week things, possibly smaller. We've done this. The Ivy League schools have this independent activities period in January, the January sort of thing. It'd be nice to have a 2-week or a 1-week course on how to program MATLAB, how to program Python, how to program Arduino controllers or Raspberry Pi microcomputers. And so I have a practical suggestion on how to do this in our library. Franchise. You guys don't start learning how to become baristas and do a coffee thing in the library, right? You talk to, who do we do now? Sodexo Marriott? AMR?
I don't know who we do.
You know, you bring them in and they do that Jazzman's Cafe, and we've been tweaking that a little bit, but that's the best idea. The App Lab across the street has these kinds of classes. They will loan out to you these little microcontrollers. The Invention Studio, which by the way is run by students, and as soon as the faculty get involved, we're going to kill it. They could franchise that in the library as well, so that you have a public policy person come in and says, I've never taken a course on SolidWorks. I don't know how to do 3D printing, but I need to print an object to show something simple, that if we could get these to Central Africa, we could change the way people do this sort of thing. Now the problem is, how do you, okay, this, you're right, how do you monetize this? How do you convert this to credit? How do you figure out who's going to go
this teach this stuff? This is what I'm talking about. Why you got to go there?
Yeah, that's the hard part, and I think this is my biggest problem. I think the tuition increases at colleges happen because we keep hiring specialty people for the Office of Undergraduate Education rather than saying faculty should get off their butts, and somewhere between 5 and 20% of what they do should be this outreach.
Hey, what was that department you got fired from?
Office of Undergraduate Education.
That's the show!
That is the show. Let's give Pete and Charlie a hand.
This is Consilience with Pete and Charlie, a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
The unity of knowledge. I always like to say that part.
You can find us on Facebook, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, and you can always get in touch with me or Pete if you look on Twitter and other social media.
And can't you also find us on Tumblr at peteandcharlie.tumblr.com?
Thank you.